This is Unicopia Green Radio with your host, Farron Dancer. Wake
up and live your... Welcome to Unicopia Green Radio. This is your host, Farron Dancer. And you guessed it, it's another beautiful day in Santa Fe. And typically it is. And that's why we love Santa Fe. And that's why we're here broadcasting each and every Saturday on KTRC Talk 1260. And Unicopia Green Radio is brought to you by Unicopia, a public benefit nonprofit organization that is dedicated to the awareness, knowledge, and synergy that is key to our sustainable future. And each week we also like to talk about sustainable thought. And, you know, many of the teachers over the centuries have talked about it being a mind universe, a thought universe, and how we create reality with our minds. And, you know, let's stay appreciative. Let's be aware of all the many, many blessings that we have in our lives and focus on that and focus on the future that we want to create by living in appreciation right now. And that's what I call sustainable thought. And Unicopia breaks down as uni, the unity consciousness, or working together, that will create the copia, or the prosperity that we're all looking to manifest for ourselves individually, collectively, and for the planet. So that's my little rundown for today. And in keeping with that theme of projecting a future that we want to live and living from that future, sometimes it's kind of fun to take some creative license and cook up a future that may be a little different from what we're living right now. And that kind of is a prelude to my guest today. Melanie Pohlman is an author. She has just completed the first in a series of books on Laurasia, which is a... I would say a imaginary world, but one that we can learn from. And in your writing of this fiction, I'm assuming, Melanie, that you know, there's a lot of overlapping to the reality we live on this earth plane and how some of these far-reaching and creative solutions can be adopted as we progress as a culture and as a race. So I want to introduce my guest. She's live on the line from Ajo, Arizona. Melanie Pohlman. Hi, Melanie. How are you today?
Hi, Farron. Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. And it's wonderful to be here with you.
Well, you know, I haven't had opportunity to actually read the first volume in your series. And I believe volume one, or the series, how would you entitle the series? Is it the Laurasia Transmissions, or describe the title, the vision, and the direction of your writings?
Yes, the title of the series is the Laurasia Transmissions.
See, I pronounced it wrong. I got it now, Laurasia.
Yes, okay. Laurasia. Yes, it's a very uncommon spelling, as are many places in science fiction. The world itself, oh, and let me back up and say, volume one, I think there will be about seven books in this series ultimately. The first one is called Evolutionary. And it's titled such because the protagonist and the actual writer of the books, these are written in first person from the perspective of a woman who lives on Laurasia. And in this first book, she's 8 years old. So we're reading her memoirs. The final book, she's 109 years old. And so through the progression of her entire life, what we do is learn about her planet through her eyes. Laurasia is a very hypothetical world, of course, but it's a lot like Earth. I wanted it to be very relatable to the readers, but it's different from Earth, I would say, in three very significant ways. One is that it has a dense atmosphere like our planet Venus, which makes it a cloud-covered planet, especially around the equator where Lynn lives. On the north and south poles, where the atmosphere is more thin, on a good day, you've got partly cloudy skies. But for the most part, they don't see their sky. They don't see the stars at night. So they have a very dim view of what lies beyond their planet. That's been their planetary history, unlike us, who we've been looking at our stars for centuries.
And for some odd reason, most of us still have a dim view. Go figure.
We still have a dim view, exactly. Now, another significant difference, and despite the fact that it's so cloud-covered, is that the electricity that the planet uses is derived almost exclusively by solar power. And how they do that, being a cloudy planet, I'm sure we'll get into later.
They must have evolved some technology beyond what we're working with then, right?
Yes. However, I will say that all of the science in this science fiction work is real science. In other words, it's science that exists on Earth. So anything that they're doing, we have the capacity to do. We are not necessarily as developed as they are in some of the applications of what they've discovered. But what they've discovered, we've also discovered. And that's why I think this book has the potential to be a good teaching tool, especially for young people.
Well, I would imagine it kind of lays out some potentials for the directions that we should be looking at as we evolve here, right?
Yes, 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 exactly. Which leads to, I think, the most significant difference between the two planets is that Laurasia has achieved an impressive degree of social maturity. And not that the planet has done that as a whole. It's still in evolutionary stages. But an entire continent, the largest continent on the planet, 350 years ago, became a single unified nation. They called themselves the Continental Union. And in the book, I call it the continent, as everyone else does. It's known as the continent. And the people, the continentals. And how the continent became the continent is my real interest in writing the book and my purpose for writing the book.
And what does that describe exactly, their evolution to become this unified entity? Obviously, that process might reflect some of what it might take for entities to come together in harmonious ways to create a unified approach to things, right?
Right. And to speak about it very generally, I would say the fulcrum point or the springboard for them really starting to make those decisions and take those actions to evolving to these higher levels that you speak of, is how they came together after a devastating cataclysm. There's an asteroid that passes very close to their planet that they don't know about because they can't see. They don't have astronomical technology developed at that point. And it comes so close to the northern part of the continent. It doesn't touch the planet at all, but it creates a very strong gravitational pull and literally tears a huge gash out of a lot of the continent, a lot of its areas that are not populated, but many that are. So it rips out a lot of infrastructure. It kills about 2% of their population, and it really affects every nation. There are at that point 9 nations. Every nation is affected. Every person feels connected to this tragedy in some way. And because there's so much loss and so much need to rebuild, they come together and share. And over the next 50 years, they have a very cooperative experience that they discover works for them. And the younger generation, especially the kids who are born into this environment of cooperation, they realize that that's how we should be living. We should be living as if we're all in it together. We're all on the same team. Wow. Everybody cares about everybody else, and everybody else cares about me. So
you got a lot of people caring about you then, right?
Pardon me?
You have a lot of people potentially caring about you.
Well, yes. I mean, imagine how that feels.
Well, and the rhetorical me is that unity consciousness piece that we're talking about, that all interconnected. You know, I just want to reflect for a moment, because we had a catastrophic event that happened within our culture, 9/11. Which is now 11 years ago.
Right. And
it was a galvanizing experience for our culture, and kind of like this little cataclysm that you mentioned in your story, how that tragedy brought people together. Now, we saw that within our culture. We felt sort of a little aspect, if you will, of unity consciousness, because this common enemy brought this focus to the need for our culture, society, to pull together and be unified. But it was a unification based on a common enemy or a tragedy, you know? Mm-hmm. And I guess that's somehow the way human nature works. But I think that there was an opportunity lost in that time and space of temporary unity consciousness, because it was so fear-based. And now we're talking about something that's a little bit different. The cataclysm in your story brings people together to really focus on cooperation and working together. And we'll have to address where that goes and how that came down when we come back from break in just a moment. This is Farron Dancer on Unicopia Green Radio, and I'm on the line from Ajo, Arizona, with my special guest, Melanie Pullman. She is an author of her current series of books. The first one's called Evolutionary, and it's, pronounce it for me one more time, Melanie.
The planet is Laurasia.
Laurasia Transmissions is the...
The Laurasia Transmissions is the name of the series of about... 7 volumes. I haven't written them all yet, but I'm thinking 7. Ultimately.
She's thinking 7 because she, like many of us, is very prolific and very aligned with her creative vision. And you know, this vision of an alternative world, an alternative society. You know, we were discussing during the break. We had an opportunity in our society with the 9/11 experience, where people came together based on what in this case was a common enemy. But I think there was an opportunity lost, and the reason it was lost was not only the fear-based aspect of it, but you mentioned to me how it was politicized. Let's talk about that a little bit and how that opportunity was lost.
Yes. Well, you know, the virtue of there being a natural disaster versus an act of terrorism to bring together a group of people in a cooperative way to heal from that is quite different, because in our case, where it was a terrorist act, and the political response to that was very divisive in our country.
Right.
It also took place over a much larger scale. When I think about flooding in the Midwest, or these communities now that are burning to the ground because of wildfires, I think in these smaller pockets, these are more manageable numbers to really not just talk about cooperation and be cooperative for a little while, and then the problem is solved, and then you go back to your old ways.
Right, of really being competitive and divisive and things like that, old ways, right?
The old ways are so strong in us.
Mm-hmm.
But when a small group of people come together and work together cooperatively, there's a greater chance that will sustain, that they can maintain that, as opposed to a larger and more diverse group of people, let's say a whole nation.
Mm-hmm.
So... you know, I think that because a natural disaster is so neutral, you know, you can't hate nature for having done this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more room for love and for compassion and tenderness and caring and decency, human decency. I think all of those ways of being with each other and even toward ourselves is a key component of a sustainable future and a cooperative society, a peaceful society,
mm-hmm.
and ultimately a peaceful world. And I think that's where we're headed. I really believe, and you know, I write this science fiction story knowing that the planet Laurasia doesn't really exist, but maybe it does. Maybe in this massive universe of universes where there are billions of galaxies, and the Milky Way is a galaxy, and it's pretty big. Think about the Milky Way times billions. Well,
yeah, that's hard to put in any kind of context.
Only,
yeah, how do you put that in a context, you know? The Milky Way times billions, you know? Well,
yeah, we can't put our mind around it at all.
No.
But I personally believe that the planet Earth is not the only planet inhabited by intelligent races who build civilizations and culture and society. And I think that these planets have a destiny. And the destiny is what you're talking about, sustainable living, cooperative living, peaceful living together, and a sense of brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
We really are the children of the same one giver of life, whatever we want to call that.
Mm-hmm. Whatever
and
source energy is
that
we want to call, right? Whatever the source energy, we want to call it,
right.
God or spirit or whatever.
Right. The word on Laurasia for God is life.
Mm-hmm. God is life.
Life.
There
yeah.
you go.
Right.
Getting a little spiritual here, folks, but, you know.
Yeah, so we can move on. If you want to go on into science or wherever you want
no,
to.
No, no, you know, hey, you know, I don't mind discussing the almighty power. So, you know, we don't have to move away from that because it's too all-encompassing. But,
or it might offend some.
It might offend some. Everybody has a different, you know, label or perspective
mm-hmm.
on what source energy might be. But as you describe source energy on Laurasia, what the essence is been discovered by the populace, and that is that they're all in it together. They all come from the same source. They're all going back to the same source ultimately. And
mm-hmm.
you know, we have the same parameters for existence here on this planet too. So the ticket that you're introducing here is this piece of commonality, of cooperation, of harmony versus sort of the theme on this planet right now. Not that we don't have those things. At least the other side is what is so publicized, and that is the disharmony, the wars, the strife,
mm-hmm.
the competition, the differences.
Right.
And the emphasis obviously ultimately needs to be placed on what we share in common as a basis
right.
for how we work together and create solutions.
Right. And you know, and I think some of that is really just a matter of time. You know, our worst behaviors are really they really come forth from our what I like to sometimes call our animal soul. You know, we have instincts that are just embedded in our blueprint, in our wiring. We're born with them. And when I love watching documentaries on animals. And when I watch them fight over food or fight over a mate, when I watch their predatory behavior,
mm-hmm.
I think to myself, we're human beings. We're animals in a human being's body. We think we're human beings because we have a brain and opposable thumbs, and we can make all this stuff and do things with it. But we're not really fully human yet, not in my opinion.
Well,
I think
the spiritual evolution piece hasn't really moved us out of the animal nature aspect of our being, right?
So I think, you know, time is on our side. And we evolution is slow and it's not pretty. It's not pretty.
No. I hadn't even put it in that context before. Because it's so slow, we don't even have a vision for whether it's pretty or ugly or whatever. It's just evolving, right?
Right. But it's painful and it's trial and error, whether nature does it or whether human beings do it.
Yeah, and it's not a constant move towards evolution. There's peaks and valleys along the way, no doubt.
Right, and dead ends. You know, the dinosaurs were an evolutionary dead end.
Well, we're going to have to take a little dead end of our own here right now and go to break. We'll get back to the dinosaurs and more when we come back on Unicopia Green Radio. Stay tuned.
To see what the we could do. Just me and you. Come on. You've got to let me go.
Welcome back. This is Farron Dancer on Unicopia Green Radio, and I'm here on the air from Ajo, Arizona, with my guest, Melanie Pullman, author of the Laurasia Transmissions, Laurasia. I got it right.
You got it.
Laurasia. I'm going to have this so totally down by the end of the show. It'll just shows you my learning curve. It's tremendous. So anyway, I just would like to remind the listeners to pick up a copy of the Green Fire Times, which is available on newsstands throughout northern New Mexico, and it has the fifth largest circulation of any publication in New Mexico, and it's all about sustainability and about the environment and about the evolution of consciousness and so many things that we talk about here on Unicopia Green Radio. And many of you may know that I write a regular column in Green Fire Times, and the topic in the August edition, which is out currently, is on our Native American culture, and that's sort of the theme of this month's issue. But I do a kind of a nice rundown of Anirondan, a Navajo Dene activist who is all about social justice and environmental justice and the plight of her people, and doing some incredible work to bring attention to those issues. So at any rate, pick up a copy of the Green Fire Times and read all about that. And welcome back, Melanie. Before the break, I think we kind of wound out with this discussion about dinosaurs, and I said we would talk about dinosaurs and more when we came back. And now here we are. So let's pick up the conversation. You remember where we were at with that, as far as the dinosaurs are concerned. Let's bring it back.
Yes. Well, I think the comment had been made that dinosaurs were an evolutionary dead end, and one reason was because their bodies were so big and their brains were so small.
Ah.
And that was
a bad combo.
This is an unfortunate combination. Right. There was no room for a neocortex, you know, and they still hadn't even built the, you know, they were not even limbic yet, so.
Define limbic.
The limbic is the mammalian brain.
Oh, okay.
And that's where we begin to develop a sense of affection and love and caring.
Oh, and the dinosaurs didn't have a lot of that going on from what I...
The reptiles, they call them cold-blooded because I guess they are, but you know, when we think of cold-blooded, we think of someone who doesn't love. They have an ice-cold heart. And I don't know this with certainty, but I think I've heard it said that some reptiles will devour their own young.
Right.
So, you know, that's how much they...
Right. So for those of you who have any desire to have a dinosaur for a pet, you might want to think twice about that.
Or even a...
or even a crocodile.
Iguana.
Iguana.
Popular pets in some places.
So let's move back to the more warm-blooded topics.
Yes.
And discuss...
The mammals. You know, I'm so fascinated with planetary history, you know, with watching how we have evolved from, you know, very, very crude cellular organisms to you know, the lower forms of reptiles, and then the amphibian, the frog was the real crossover into the land-based animals and also the the coming of the limbic brain, the development of the limbic brain, which is the mammalian brain. And mammals, unlike reptiles, they care for their young. A lot of mammals have very social relationships with each other. They're very, some of them mate for life. Mm-hmm. They're very loyal to their clan. That doesn't mean that they don't fight with others. They do, but that's part of caring, part of love. There's an earlier form of love where we just care. We love the ones we love and everybody else. We either don't care about them or they're our enemy and we hate them.
Mm-hmm.
What we're evolving toward is that we love everybody, no matter what.
And that can be
capable of that.
Well,
we're built for that.
We are.
And, pardon?
Well, I just want to add that, you know, we want to love everyone no matter what. And you say we're built for that. And each and every one of us is constantly challenged by how to accept, negative energy that's coming at us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we embrace, how do we love our enemies? I mean, that, you know, this goes back to biblical times. This is this probably the spiritual question of the ages. How do you transcend, time and space and get to an acceptance of compassion and heart space that would allow that loving of one enemies no matter what? I mean, it's, probably the biggest challenge that we have as humans.
It's easier to do, I think, when our enemy is far away. In other words, they live on another continent, and
right.
our hatred for them is more—it's more a cultural artifact that's passed on from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at the Middle East and all the hatred there, they hate each other so much, and yet they're so similar. I mean, the Sunnis and the Shiites are so similar. They just got a few little differences there, and they're willing to kill each other.
Right.
That's such an arbitrary reason to hate.
Well, and it is programmed into their gene pool and into their whole evolutionary development.
It's culturally ingrained.
Culturally ingrained. So they're
right.
they're just programmed to hate certain energies.
Right. You see the young kids watching and listening constantly to their parents ranting and raving about their enemies, and so that's what the children are enculturated with.
Yes.
So the role models that we are to our younger generations is one of the most important jobs we have as human beings. Children are so influenceable. And we think that we send them to school, and what they learn there. But no, most of what they learn by watching the adults around them. And a lot of it is just absorbed rather unconsciously.
Well, I'm going to give an example. My son is learning to drive. He has his driver's permit.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of was in a hurry leaving our house the other day and did a little California stop, basically mm-hmm. cruised through the stop sign. And my son turned to me and he said, "Boy, you're a great example, Dad." And I went, what? You know, I didn't even stop to think about what I had done, you know, and he ran it down. And I was like, oh, Jesus. So I'm the one, you know, kind of modeling how you're going to be driving for the next 50 years or whatever, you know. It's like, and he goes, yeah, and I better not be watching you. So that's the point. You know, that just came home for me right now because it happened 2 days ago. But
yeah, that's a perfect example.
Yeah,
yes.
And that's innocent enough, but that's not some behavior that you want to model after necessarily. It gets you a ticket if nothing else.
That's right. That's right. Now, here's something that I think is a fortunate aspect of younger generations. Each next younger generation, they tend to rebel in some way against the values of the older generation.
Yeah, that's going to happen no matter what, too.
No matter what.
Yeah, look how hip we were, you know. And now I say hip to my son, and he goes, "Oh yeah, Dad, I'm elbow." You know, that's just a part of the rebellion, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, I look at young people who are piercing and tattooing, and I think, oh my gosh, if I were a parent with a teenager, I don't think I would feel good about that. if my kid came and said, "Oh, I want to get this part of my body pierced,"
right?
I'm not as open-minded to that as they are.
The parents or the kids doing it.
But I want to respect the fact that it's something for them that has meaning. It has meaning, even though I don't really understand it or necessarily agree with it. It has meaning to them, and meaning is essential. Meaning is what takes us out of not thinking very much about anything to actually having values and,
right.
and aspiring to values and living values. And by values, I mean the values of love, decency, compassion, respect. So I think meaning is a stepping point. But I don't want to get philosophical.
So do we have more passion? Have more compassion and more love towards the younger generation when we view their piercings and their tattoos and all that as an expression, and mm-hmm. and love them for their expression without judgment? I mean, would that
right.
be the
exactly.
ultimate way of dealing with it? Obviously,
exactly.
And we
yeah.
and my generation tends to forget, as we get grossed out by the piercings and the tattoos and all of that, what we were doing back in our teen years, in our 20s and whatnot. And it was very fashionable in those days not to wash your clothes for weeks on end, you know, because, you know, that was a sign of social conformity or something. And, you know, I didn't go that far in my alternative days, but a lot of people did. And I remember walking through a mall in Miami Beach after being up, psychedelicized on the beach all night long, and walked through this mall of all these retired people looking at us freaks, you know, and literally screaming when they saw us walking along, you know, it's like we had invaded them. And so it was that more, you know, contrary than piercings and tattoos? I don't know. But your point was that every generation is going to rebel no matter what, because they're wanting to find their own identity, their own voice, and mm-hmm. all of that.
And I think that the value in that, the real advantage, evolutionarily speaking, is that it's the younger generations who are going to be more open-minded to the kind of change that will move us forward along progressive lines.
Yes.
The older generations tend to like things the way they are and want to keep them that way. And the younger generations come in, and they're enculturated with a whole new environment of stuff. For example...
Hold that thought. I've got to go to break right now. We're going to be back for a final segment when we return in just a moment. Welcome back. This is Farron Dancer on Unicopia Green Radio. And I just want to remind the listeners that we're now simulcast each and every Saturday at 4 p.m. on SantaFe.com. And all of the shows are podcast on SantaFe.com as well, which means you can go back and pull up an archive show. I also want to remind the listeners to go to Unicopia, UNICOPIA.org. And we have archived virtually 2 years of radio shows on the website, as well as our other activities and archived articles and links to other organizations and technologies and so on. So check out our website, unicopia.org. And if you have any questions or you have a desire to come on Unicopia Green Radio as a guest, drop me an email at Farron, F-A-R-E-N, at unicopia.org. Welcome back to the studio via the airwaves from Ajo, Arizona. Melanie Pullman, welcome back. This is our final segment. And before we went to break, you were talking about this consciousness piece. And I want to pose a question to you, because you had mentioned earlier before the show that the Earth doesn't really need more technology. Of course, we're all like spooled up and programmed mm-hmm. to believe that technology mm-hmm. is going to save the world and save everything. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. but what we need beyond more technology is higher values. And that's the consciousness piece that we like to convey here on a regular basis. So give me your spin on that, will you, Melanie?
Yes. And when I say higher values, I mean the higher values of love, kindness, respect, compassion, caring, decency. For a group of people as intelligent as we are and as loving as we are, we don't treat each other very well.
Have you noticed that?
It's, you know, sometimes I want to take humanity by the arms and shake it and say, come on, be not. Why can we not be kind to each other? We're all hurting, you know, and I think this might be maybe one of perhaps many openings for the individual person to, you know, bridge that gulf between being someone who distrusts or disrespects or hates into someone who can really truly love everyone. And that is that everybody's hurting. Everybody hurts. Mm-hmm. Everybody in this world is hurting. And we hear that from our spiritual teachers. But if they're just words that we don't act on, it doesn't mean anything.
Well, and our own hurt is the biggest story there is. So it's hard to automatically identify with what other people are going through. Because, of course, our story is the most important story. It's ours.
That's right.
And that compassion or that unity awareness, and just like you say, everybody's hurting on some level. We don't stop to think like that. You know, we're just kind of mm-hmm. spooled up in our own problems, our own issues, mm-hmm. our own pain. And if somebody, cuts us off at the intersection, and I'm probably as guilty of this as anyone, we're not happy.
We
don't have tolerance for that. We don't have tolerance for much when
That's
it comes
right.
to others invading our space or playing out their own stuff. So there's the peace, there's the compassion and the acceptance that maybe the other person's story might even be a little more problematic or difficult than our own. So that's not a bad place to start, I suppose.
No, it's not. It's a place to start, and you know we all have a very individual suffering. We all hurt in very unique and individual ways, and maybe that's why it seems more to us like our problems are bigger than anyone else's.
Well, they're ours, yeah. So there you go.
It's what's right in front of us.
Yeah, it's right here. It's here and now. We feel the effects of our issues and problems. We don't really feel the effects of other people's issues and problems unless they make them. They make their problems ours, or we take them on, or something. But we try to stay insulated from that because, God knows, we got enough to deal with right here. Right?
That's right. You know, there. I'm thinking of an article. An article a friend of mine sent to me just a few days ago. It's an interview with John Cusack and a co-author of a book that is getting a lot of attention now. The book is called The Tools. And it's written by a psychiatrist and a psychologist, and they've worked in Hollywood with actors. But this book is really written for anyone. And the tools that they talk about are tools for how to work with our problems and use our problems or our conflicts or whatever is making us crazy and using those as a fulcrum point to evolve to a higher level of maturity. And maturity is, when I think about higher values, I think about maturity. I think about personal maturity and collective maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these tools, you know, they've got five tools, is active love. And the point being that love is more than just an emotion. It's more than an affect. It's a verb. It's something that we do. And if we feel love and we act on that love, that active love is a very powerful force in our life. Mm-hmm. And if we can go into any situation, and especially if it's a situation that we're hating, maybe we're hating the person we're talking to, and if we can summon up the feeling of love in our heart and act on that in some small way, we have matured above that, purely immature, childish, hateful, And I would say, very genetically programmed
right.
Level
again.
Of living.
Yeah, so there's the opportunity for all of us to not just do the reactionary approach to things or the knee-jerk approach to things that comes from that programming, mm-hmm. and to be present enough in the moment to stop those knee-jerk reactions and make the space for others and come from a different perspective on that. But we have to be present. We have to pull back from our own story enough to hold the space for others. And in doing that, then we can move more towards a unity consciousness approach in terms of how we relate and how we work with others. So
yes, and you use the word identification. I think that's a really important piece of the transformation, the personal transformation, is that our identification shifts away from the little me that's
hurting.
That's hurting.
I have to cut in here, Melanie. We're mm-hmm. we're running out of time. I just want to make just a little further emphasis on the fact that love should be the focus, and self-love is where it begins, and that's not an easy thing often given our struggles in the world. But let's take a moment and focus on love as the premise for how we can transform ourselves and the planet. I want to thank you for being here so much today, Melanie. This perspective is well-received, and hopefully it's well-received by our listeners as well. So we'll get you back again as your books progress. I want to thank the listeners for being here each and every Saturday at 4 p.m. This is Farron Dancer on Unicopia Green Radio, signing off.